will just go through the action sheet. Marie, is there anything to bring out of the action sheet? Everybody happy enough with what they have in front of them?
Sure, just to note, the House of Commons event is from the action sheet that we were unfortunately able to secure a place at that event, so we are not attending from the area one environment perspective.
Okay, Marie, Henry?
Yeah, I'm sure it's just on that there, the transfer of tourism and heritage asset. And it was agreed at the June monthly meeting that we would retain those seats until the DEA had a formal meeting on the issue and we have a look around the summer. That hasn't happened. So it would have actually taken something close to motion to at the September meeting. And there is a call in place, and we'd like that recorded.
We are aware of that, Henry, and we just have to let it be through the process now. Right.
I think it's important that we don't remove any seats or interfere with them until we get that clarified.
Yeah. Willie, it just has to go through the process, but Willie...
Because of the negative publicity that the Newcastle community is going to suffer, they're no longer interested in the future.
Okay, thank you very much. We're just going to move on to the presentation from Owen McGuinness here, University of Ulster, regarding Erie Morningown Economic Summer 2019 Outlook. The presentation will be approximately 10 minutes, and then we will have a quick round of questions if anybody wants to ask any questions. And then we'll be moving on through the rest of the meeting. Thank you very much, Owen. Hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think this is certainly the first outlook or forecast since the council election. So I've done a sort of quick slide at the start for some council or committee members. You haven't been here before. So basically, just a little bit of an introduction as to what the forecast or scenarios might be used for. There's been more, I suppose, of a guide or a 10-year forecast, or a bit more of a guide as to what might happen, probably more specifically in the first few years, but and then into the longer term. We've set this forecast under three scenarios from the university. There's a baseline or a central scenario, which is a little bit like business as usual, with in this forecast, there's an orderly exit from the EU built into that. In an upper scenario, there's still the orderly Brexit built into that, but that's more where the Northern Ireland and Muir Morningown Council economy move in an upward direction, perhaps with assistance of things like City Deal and other aspects like that. And then in a lower scenario, that's really tailored in around quite severe global downturn coming in the next couple of years, or at least in the sort of first half of the coming decade, and a hard or disorderly Brexit, depending on your political persuasion or what is built into that in the lower scenario. So in terms of kind of the external environment, as we might look at, there are good aspects to this, and then there are uncertain ones, both locally and globally. Employment growth locally in the UK and the Irish economy and right across Europe has been quite strong over the last year and continues to be quite thin there. Real wages closer to home have started to increase again for the first time in perhaps after a decade. We're seeing a bit of upward pressure on wages there, which is something to be welcomed, I think, for a lot of things in terms of kind of local demand in the economy. And the public finances are reasonably healthy at the moment. Big uncertainties. I mean, we talk Brexit, obviously still not resolved towards the bottom of that. But perhaps an even bigger one is the kind of risks around trade wars. There are one aspect of that, we kind of look at the aspects of Brexit the effects Brexit might have. Many of our exporters in this part of the world would be more, in a sense, impacted by full tariffs coming on in the US than they might even be by Brexit. So a lot of risks out there, a lot of uncertainties. Still big problems in household finances with kind of tied to low wage growth over the last decade. Productivity growth locally and more broadly is still significantly below average. And I think it's from the assembly there around on the uncertainties that causes. In terms of the outlook, then, it's a modern truth case here. We're not seeing seeing growth, but not huge growth. Now, I suppose, bear in mind, if you look at the kind of top line there, it's sort of 1.8% at the top, and none of the years out to 2022 to touch that. Historically speaking, less than 2% growth would be seen as it's in the kind of stagnation in the economy. So it's very, very muddling through growth here. So that's something to kind of bear in mind, I think. Outlook then for Northern Ireland as a whole, resilience, some growth, particularly in an upper scenario. You can kind of see the difference of around about 30,000 between the upper and the lower, or sorry, between the baseline and the lower scenario there. So a lower scenario pretty much means decline for a number of years, and then followed by growth, struggling to come back to where we are now. So that's the three scenarios there around employment for the whole of the north. In terms of moving closer to home, and again, possibly for people who are newer to the committee, the recent performance has been good in Uring Moore and Down. Uring Moore and Down has had a good recovery in many ways. There's been an employment recovery, as I say. Our enterprise trends here locally are quite strong, both if you compare to the Northern Ireland average, but even further afield than that in terms of business starts, in terms of kind of the scaling up challenges that we face here in the council area. A lot of good entrepreneurship figures there, and then some legacy issues that we would have here, particularly among residents in the council area. Legacy issues around long-term unemployed, legacy issues around inactivity there as well. And some of those, even with the recovery, haven't been resolved to the way that we probably would like to see it. In terms of what people work at, our workplace employment here is over 70,000, up a fifth since 2001, and as you can see, they're higher than the previous peak year of 2008. And by and large, three big sectors here that we have, manufacturing, healthcare, and tourism, those haven't really changed. Tourism's probably come into the mix more in the last 10 years, but they haven't really changed in a number of decades. One thing possibly to watch out for is the growth in ICT that we've seen over the last 10 years as well, alongside tourism. Retail is obviously another key sector right across the council area. So recent performance has been pretty good by and large. In terms of the outlook then, GVA taken as a kind of guide to economic growth more generally, being, you know, growth in wages, growth in profits at company level, that sort of thing. In the baseline scenario, we're expecting to see growth of about 400 million in the local GVA. It's quite good, but as you can see at the last bullet point there, slightly below the Northern Ireland average for that period, and lower than certainly the growth in the recovery. So again, modelling through modest growth really is probably the way to best put that. Workplace employment, again, slow growth expected over the next year or the next decade. A lot of this, I suppose, is to do partially with uncertainty that's out there, but partially also the stage we're at the business cycle now after recovery. It's a case of when, not if, I think, will hit. And it's how well we deal with that, I think, is going to be the key factor in the next couple of years if you look at those different scenarios. If you look at the lower scenario, you're only really seeing 100 jobs added on in that over the period, which is pretty much not even still is going backwards really for that. Resident employment rates, which is probably something to think about, we're expecting to see those rise, not very much, and some of that, if not all of that, could be from commuting as opposed to workplace increases. So there's an issue there. With the good sense or the good luck here in this council area to have high population growth, but in a sense then you need to have jobs created in the area to fill that for resident employment rates. Otherwise people have to get into a van and go to Dublin or Belfast or really close to whatever it is to pick up jobs there. In terms of we're expecting to see growth in terms of sectors, a lot of changes coming down the track there. Again, a bit of a professional scientific ICT, good growth in both of those, but as I say, a lot of life in the older dogs, yet manufacturing and health will continue in terms of the numbers to drive a lot of that and growth. Agriculture, as we've seen over the last 20 years, continuing an expectation of losing jobs there under, at least under two scenarios, baseline and lower, perhaps with a slight uptick in a, or standstill in another scenario. So agriculture is continuing to be under pressure there. And then that would be fishing as well, which is a kind of a cause for worry within the council area. Unemployment outlook, given that slow growth, given population rises, and given the kind of low levels of unemployment at the moment, we're actually forecasting that will actually tick upwards to 3.4% in 2021, and then stay pretty much that's we're expecting a small raise in unemployment, around about 900 more people on the register in 10 years' time than we have today. And that, I suppose, highlights the need for employability measures and to keep people close to the labour market and available for work. And activity will go down. We expect that to go down. Some of that, I suspect, is around the kind of employability measures that are out there to bring people out of inactivity and into employment, or at least onto the unemployment register where they're closer to work. But we are expecting that to be big. But this poses a big challenge. If you look at the numbers, 32,000 people are expected to still be economically inactive. You take students out of that, you're still looking at numbers in the council area of around 20,000 people with health, disability, caring challenges there around employment. And keeping some of those people close to employment is a challenge. And that's a kind of a summary of it, which is probably a little bit small to see, but the slide is supposed to be shared very much afterwards. So that's basically the key outsides, the key challenges there. I mentioned the last, the one there around understanding what Brexit might mean for the local economy and the supply for skills. Those are probably two that I think are important. I suppose overall, what I would say, when I came to sort of speak to the council earlier in the year, I probably would have been slightly more optimistic than I would be now. I think a lot of the things in the external economy are going to have us under more pressure in the next year or two. I think some of the figures coming out from the Ulster Bank PMI, some of the other forecasts during the rounds recently would point at a downward, or pressures on the downside as opposed to the upside. So I think that's something to kind of bear in mind. And that's without considering what Brexit might end up as, never mind what that might mean. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much, Owen. Have we any questions, queries, comments? Councillor Stubb?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. Just in generally, across the North, are you encountering any evidence of businesses putting on hold investment decisions, waiting on the outcome of Brexit? For example, buying a plant of machinery to premises or taking on new staff.
Yeah, we've actually done a fair bit of consulting over the last 6 months now, and there are two camps in that. There are those, if I put it crudely, there are those who are kind of externally looking, tend to be kind of in the manufacturing, exporting side of things, who are very definitely putting on hold both employment plans for the next 12 months and investment plans also. So that's one camp. Another camp that would be more looking at kind of domestic demands are tend to continue with their investment plans. If you think about in-range hotels, things like that, there's still investment plans out there. What's interesting about that are even people who are kind of developing in the property for, say, office space or that sort of thing, there are a lot of kind of investment plans going ahead there. I think we're, as I say, where the kind of tricky part of that comes is that much of that is actually pent up investment demand that has been put off for a couple of years. So in some cases, if you're looking at the retail offer or the office offer, it's because that's actually got a bit tired. So it's an investment or sort of an upgrade of existing things. Hotels, I think, are something similar. There's obviously a country example in that, in some of the new hotel offerings here in the area as well, the castles and what have you. But interestingly enough, it's a kind of a, depending on what your orientation is, you're exporting, you're hanging on to see what happens next.
Okay. Henry, Councillor McTeer had indicated that he wanted to definitely put on your mic.
Thanks, Owen. Thank you for the presentation. Can I just ask, have you any figures on as someone to the board again in terms of the Brexit discussion at the moment? Potential positive approving from an NH Northern Ireland Pacific deal in Brexit?
As a kind of a, let's say, a Northern Ireland only backstop, as opposed to.
Yeah, that's right. Do you have any figures on how that would
there, well, they're kind of, it depends what you, I suppose the whole question of that is, it depends what you set as your baseline. And there has been a bit of research on what would mean for the next 3-4 years on trade effects only. So the trade effect if Northern Ireland remained as is now, went with a backstop, or you know, was out with a harder Brexit or a no deal Brexit. And certainly of those four scenarios, staying as is at the moment is kind of seen as the most positive, smaller but negative effect even of the backstop. And then you're kind of looking at the bigger negative effects of, you know, free trade agreements somewhere down the line, or indeed crashing out without a deal for now. So you're kind of looking almost like a league table there, with staying as is being top of the league table. Now they're in, we're talking here about growth being lost. So let's say, for example, if we're looking at Newry Morden down being the situation there, 1.2% over the next decade, you could then be looking at a, you know, 0.2-0.3% coming off that growth level. So there's some growth, but reduced from what it would be.
Well, there's some talk that, you know, there would be an ideal situation for decisions geographically and politically as well. There wasn't a specific one, because the best of both worlds then would be available and would stimulate the economy.
My own view on that is that you have a, I suppose my own view on that is that it's even at that, it's a mitigating effect as opposed to a, you know, I don't see, if we go along the lane we are now, I still see that as kind of going on the downside as opposed to actually providing an actual upside to that. I mean, I think there is some talk, I think, of location of FDI and so on and so forth. I still think the, in the short term, the uncertainty that would sit around a backstop as to whether it would be, you know, lasting, what the alternative arrangements may be somewhere down the road if the backstop was to disappear. I think that in some ways that I still, my still feeling on this is that a kind of a good, firm, certain deal, be that around Northern Ireland staying within the customs unions and single market, or whatever that is going to be key for the economy here. But as I say, I still think there's a downside to that even with that, because of the, you know, because of the uncertainty, because of the change.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, thanks very much, Madam Chair. Whenever I hear people talking about the backstop, you know, if you look at what Mr. Barnier said, he said it was being designed on the basis of the relationship between the Canary Islands and mainland Spain. And if you look at that relationship, it's actually very, very rigid, and it's actually damaging to the Canary Islands now. And, you know, how could it be to our benefit if GB was able to lower corporation tax and then the VAT regime become really competitive, where we would be stuck in the very rigid and stagnant EU setup? I can't see how it would benefit us in the States. I can understand the South wanting to make sure that we don't be able to liberalise trade and that type of thing, because, you know, it would be hurtful for them. But in general terms, do you see any problem for Newry Morden with AI? Is that a threat? And also, people talk about carbon neutral economy. You know, I can't see how agriculture and whatever would maintain its present output if we're forced into some of these low carbon measures. I think that's a big threat to the rural economy. Thank you.
I'm going to leave the first bit of it alone, but I'm sure just deal with the second bit, the automation and the carbon, low carbon, I think, if that's okay. On the automation or AI, some work we've been recently doing on that in the policy centre would suggest that it's the way it's definitely to understand automation and the threat or the opportunity that may come in that is actually in it's in the tasks and occupations that we have within our local economy. We kind of talk about, you know, sectors and that, but actually I think you have to get right down to what tasks do people do at work, and how much could those be replaced by machines or machine learning or automation of various kinds.
Do you think because of our setup we are quite immune from that as compared to car production or something like that?
My thing on that is that we probably need to understand just how much of that has already been automated. I think it's, I'll give you an example. If you went into a dairy processing factory about 6 months ago, and I was doing that work, and it was a processing factory in Columbia down in Virginia in County Calvin that used to employ 250 people. Now it's 30 people working that, because so many of the processes were already automated. So I think in the sense of production lines, much of that work has already done it. I would give you, if you went to Glen Dimplex or somewhere like that now and compared what it was 20 or 30 years ago, you would see the same example. Where I think your big things come are in terms of almost like back office. The big kind of threat comes in terms of back office detail, some automation around retail and accommodation and those sorts of places. And our problem that I see it with automation is not that the number of jobs, but that many of the jobs, go back to the point that I made there about inactive people coming out with low skills, it's going to be crippling for a lot of people. There'll be a gap between those who have low skills or no skills, and those who are coming out with skills will only grow with automation. And I suppose, as anybody in the room, you know, working within political parties, or that the key thing here is making sure that it's skills that you're emphasising, because automation is coming, come what may. But I think that preparing people for that, preparing people for what that might mean, making sure that certainly we're getting our percentages down of people coming out, still coming out of schools or colleges with fewer and less qualifications, getting all of that resolved, I think you've done that. And somewhere or another, a similar answer, but in a different way, I think around low carbon. That again, in my opinion, is definitely coming, whatever way we might look at it. Now, it may come in but two ways. There's only two ways that does come to us. It's one that we actually tax the products we're using in terms of carbon taxes for, say, driving a car, flying, you know, producing agricultural products, whatever it may be that are seen as high carbon in terms of that. Or we get some way or another that we actually mitigate against that in the production processes. But one way or another, that challenge is not going to go away anytime soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Owen. Councillor Hannah? Oh, no. I didn't see anybody. Sorry, that Councillor Hannah, I didn't see Councillor Enright, so you go ahead, Glenn.
Thank you, I'll get in. Just a couple of things. This round back, I know it's quite clever, but I know speaking business is around 15 Harbour, just for instance. In the last week or two, I've been speaking to most of the rooms that have. Be quite honest with you, there's some of them that might be more optimistic than you would imagine, to be quite honest. They have been little bits of secure that there's in their sales. I know a lot of the stuff goes into Europe, so there's no of what is caught on the ground in St. Jean. What I'm trying to say is, our business is maybe possibly more prepared than what a lot of us are actually led to believe. Just on the farming there, when you were doing the presentation there, you talked about jobs possibly declining from by 900 to 900. Are you telling the farmers that they can leave in the business, or are you talking about jobs on farms? Because there's not a massive amount of jobs on farms now. Could you explain that to me, please?
Yeah. It includes, I mean, on the farming side, it's generally people who are kind of coming out and those where people are going moving from full-time farming into succession into part-time or what you might call sort of occasional farming, and then that doesn't tend to be, sorry, they tend to be counted in somewhere else, like say construction or manufacturing or whatever it might be, and then part-time farming. So the jobs move from one sector to another in that way.
Yeah.
In terms of the kind of fishing thing, I think one interesting thing about preparation for Brexit is if you talk to businesses, large firms are fairly well up to speed now. I think anybody who's employing 30, 40 or more people tend to be up to speed, tend to in terms of where their suppliers are or where their export markets are.
So really, it's more or less what you're saying, very vulnerable.
Yeah. I mean, because at the end of the day, I was at a thing a couple of weeks ago at Enterprise Ireland in Dublin, and they were given an average cost of what it was cost to actually prepare for Brexit. It could be in around sort of 5,000 to 10,000 euro for some of the smaller firms around Dublin in terms of bringing in specialist advice. It's a big cost if you're employing less than 10 people. It's not so much a big cost if you're, you know, 40, 50 and upwards. So you can kind of see there is definitely a size differential here in terms of how prepared or what types of firms are prepared in terms of looking at their supply chains and that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay,
Karen
Fernwright.
Thank you. The UK Prime Minister's visit to Dublin today raised some interesting prospects which perhaps weren't reflected in your economic forecasts. Speculation on Ulster Radio and on RTE were suggesting that now he's no longer dependent on the DUP for support. He could go back to the original proposal of having the Great Britain outside of the European common market, whereas Ireland as an island remains within the common market. It would seem to me, well, certainly the official government spokesperson for the Republic was saying that although this will give more of Ireland a relative advantage vis-a-vis the rest of Ireland, it would appear to be the best of all worlds, and it would, in my view, transform the economic outlook, because North Ireland would both be part of the United Kingdom market and part of the common market as well. So we could actually become the preferred location for jobs and investment. What would you think about that line, and would it change your forecast?
I think there's an argument for it in terms of the best of all worlds. Again, people have said, Northern Ireland or parts of it, at least, it would be a kind of case of rather than chasing investment in Silicon Valley, you would chase it in Liffey Valley. So in a sense, the relocation could be, in a sense, for companies that are headquartered in Dublin now being pursued to come to Belfast because you have access to two markets on a sort of frictionless basis. You can kind of scheme the argument for that. I still think in the short term, even with a kind of Northern Ireland only backstop, I still think we're in for a bumpy couple of years, even with that. Now, in the longer term, I can see that it could end up to be the best of all worlds if we kind of end up doing that. But two things I suppose I'd caution on that is that there would still remain, I think, a degree of uncertainty, given that the backstop is, after all, if it remains as a backstop, is after all an insurance policy. So there would still be question marks over whether it gets replaced at some stage with something else. I suppose that's the first thing to say. And the second thing would be that, companies would be still, in the case of being uncertain about where their trade relationships might be in 2 years hence or 3 years hence, during that. So we could be in for a bumpy ride in the short term. If, I suppose, we were in somewhere where there was a kind of a certainty and Northern Ireland being remaining part of the customs union and or single market on a longer term basis, which is basically the basis for the backstop, then I think Councillor Enright, your best of all worlds scenario starts to come into play. But as I say, we have a couple of years before of transition before we could say with any certainty one way or another how that might work out.
Okay, I don't see anyone else indicating that they wanted
to.
Sorry, Councillor Larkin.
Thanks, Chair. I just got Kidoman and some of the Councillor issues with the backstop, etc. I was just wondering, have you taken on board the inevitable reunification of the island and how that would offset any negative? Because our people, even though the government seem to shy about bringing forward proposals on it, I believe that it's the solution to all our problems.
The reunification of Ireland within the United Kingdom.
Would you like to make any comments? And we had a chat about this over a couple of drinks a couple of weekends ago. And I suppose the point that I would say on that is that it's a conversation that is now, it's a genie or a conversation that is now very much out of the bottle. I mean, I think in a sense where it's probably always been in the round the conversation, but you now have a situation where people who have no political view on it one way or another are starting to look at what the economics of it might look like, and in a sense, we're talking a transition period from Brexit, are you talking a 20-year transition for Northern Ireland, or 50-year transition, or so on and so forth? One of the things to look at, I think, if people are interested in this, is what happened with East and Germany, and I'm not comparing Northern Ireland to East Germany, I'm not going there at all, but what I was sort of saying is that in terms of kind of solidarity funds, levies and so on that were there on, and my wife used to live in West Germany, and they all had at least a sort of a, you know, both a two Deutschmarks out of every 100 for solidarity levy for the best part of 20 years. In that. So there'll be interesting kind of models there. I don't think I'll pass on the inevitability of the question, but as I say, the conversation is certainly out there.
Would that two Deutschmarks, which is probably 3 euros or something like that, made it potentially expensive? Or?
Okay, thanks very much. And I know what I think, I'll let you go before somebody stops you. Before there's a diplomatic rally. The only thing certain is we're still very uncertain. But thank you very much for that, Owen. Appreciate that. I'll just turn your relay out.
Just thank you, Madam Chair. We're currently supplementing, I must say, a lot of years ago, we're not there.
Yeah.
You're welcome to back of the new
chair. No. Okay. We're going to move on then to item 5. I actually saw this and I thought Game of Thrones was coming to play Scullion, but apparently not. Item 5 is the Dragons and the Hills Project. Marie, if you would like to.
Yeah, Chairman, I have the report there, Chairman. It's really a proposal that's come following work that the Ring of Volume partnership with the Doom and the Amphibian and the Group, Chairman. They're seeking our support for an application for the Northern District Chairman to the Heritage Salary Fund, Chairman. Recommend approval that we would support the applications to improve the conservation of the area and the ecosystem and to increase awareness, Chairman.
Okay, Councillor Larkin.
Chair,
I just wish to propose that we accept the recommendation. Okay, thank you for that. Have we a second or any other issues? Yeah. Councillor Clark, second, and everybody's happy to move. Sorry, Terry.
Well, yes, I do welcome the paper, and I'm just wondering at some stage if the Dragons and the Hills could visit the element, and maybe with the help you said, maybe we could extend a very warm welcome to them, so maybe at some stage that the element could be kept in as well.
Okay, we'll move on then to item 6, which is the update regarding the artisan markets, and again, Jonathan will take this item.
Chairman, the report details the Council had previously agreed to run artisan markets in Glenpatrick and Newcastle. There's some detail there in terms of the outputs of those there. There was additional pilot delivered in Warren Point. And the paper then goes on, I suppose, gives an analysis of all those events to date. But the paper then goes on to look at that's how this could be the bars and market initiative could be rolled out across the district. So do you have a recommendation there to continue with the structures that have been established in both Glenpatrick, the Moorings, and in Copley Term, and a proposal to work through the DEA to deliver similar events through that they're in the areas, Chairman, so proposal is to extend the current service level agreements and to explore through the DEAs the provision of additional artisan markets in the district, Chairman.
Okay, Councillor McAteer.
Yes, Chair, and you, Chair, I'm accepting the proposal of the central recommendation would like to pay tribute to all the optional staff who have carried out this whole program. I do believe that this additional funding will bend down the concept of regularity for both producers and for the customer as well. And again, I hope that other producers now, having looked at the success of the markets, would be encouraged and would be an inspiration to anyone who's thinking of setting up either a small craft or food product to bring that forward as well. So we looked at over 20 artisan stalls in the different markets, and the latest figures I think for the Warren Point one in around 5,000 people that they have come through. I know that was tied up with the giants, Bessler and Point, but certainly you see the figures 1,500 on the national side, 5,000 people coming in. I've spoken to a lot of the producers, and I'm absolutely delighted at the turnover they're getting. And,
okay. Thank you, Councillor Andrews. You were next in the case.
partnership has been forced more and more to make grant applications for what are really core functions of council or government departments. So whilst I wouldn't speak against the need to apply to the National Lottery, what I would say is that the strength of the Lakehaven area covers about one third of the geographical area of our council. I have Dundrum Bay, it has two blue flag beaches, it has four European beaches, it's got 11 other beaches, it's got 365 islands on strength of loch. It's a very significant part of what we do as a council in terms of not just landscape management, but in terms of the planning process, in terms of the delegated powers we have from the seven government departments, and certainly as a part of our tourism offering, it probably is about 50% of what we have to offer overall within the council. So the point I'm trying to make, Chairperson, is that if we continue to underfund the strength of the Lakehaven Partnership and we don't talk to ours about upping the core funding which comes from the two councils and from the Department of the Environment, what we're actually doing is not funding core council functions everywhere from Kinnane to the Downpatrick coast and down to Dundrum. Now,
Councillor Enright, there's a proposal here in front of you. I understand and accept fully what you're saying. We're not going to resolve that here. What I would suggest is that you actually have a conversation with the officers after and ask them to explore that. The paper in front of us today is looking for a proposer and a seconder to explore what is in front of us, funding. And certainly, at these meetings we discuss only what is limited in front of us. I am not discounting your remarks, I'm just saying perhaps speak to one of the officers and ask them to go and look into that and bring a more thorough paper for discussion back on that subject. But if you don't have any issues, are you happy to propose that?
I'll certainly propose with the overriding comment that we need to address the core funding of our functions within the strength of the Lakehaven.
Okay, and I'm asking the officers to take that on board. Councillor Andrews, and then Councillor Andrews.
First of all, Chair, thank you very much. And again, I'd like to thank the officers for bringing the paper this afternoon. I know I've sat beside the Lakehaven Partnership for a previous reincarnation in the old down council, and I see that we have so much to do. But I understand that the council can only do so much, and it's up to other bodies elsewhere to do the rest. But as I say, I'm very passionate about the area, the strength of the rock of the Keel and the Coyle Basin and all, and if there's anything that we can do from this end to enhance that, go for it. So I would take the opportunity to encourage any means possible whatsoever, and that I would only be too glad to second that it will be there. Thank you,
Chair.
Just very briefly, I was going to second what happens there on. In relation to the advice that you give yourself, I think that's the way that we should reach out to everybody after that and move forward with all the people coming. Therefore, this is really concerning. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor Curran. We move on then to the Newry Public Realm Tier 3, the letter of offer. Again, Jonathan is going to take this.
Right, Chair, this is just confirmation we've received the letter of offer from the Department of Communities. As the Council will be aware, we've been working on this scheme through the local elected reps and stakeholder group chairman for Newry City. The letter of offer is now yet, and we're seeking approval to send the letter of offer and move to commence the scheme chairman in early 2020.
Okay, thank you,
Councillor Stubb. Yeah, but I just propose, Chair, and quickly let's move on, and John and I was going to help work on this with the end of it. And the better Hudspeed is still very vibrant, so our own market is. And but the area of Hudspeed, we're still actually relevant in the Bowman's Park, and it's one of the few areas in the centre town where they have people living, so good to see that. And, on a wet day, sure, the paving is.
Okay, I appreciate that, Councillor Hart.
Thank you very much,
Councillor Hart. Everybody else is happy, and we move on to item 9, the services level agreement with the Woodland Trust. Again, Jonathan, this is yours.
The Woodland Trust has approached the Council for the Rainbow Lift Partnership in relation to the development series of tree plants across the district here for 10 farmland per year. They would require a service that the council enter into a service that agreement with them to deliver that service at a cost of £7,000 per annum in terms of the local authority. This would be supported through the NAEA grant that the local parks have to support the running of the AMDs both in the Red Bull and the strength of Rock McKeown areas. So we would recommend that we approve the council or recommend the council that we enter into a service that agreement with the local trust for this.
Okay, thanks, Lily. Is that, sorry, Willie, is that your
Chair, I'm just going to propose to accept the recommendation. I think we have to do everything we can to increase the amount of trees in the island of Ireland, particularly in the north of Ireland, we're well behind the rest of Europe in regards to this, and any sort of incentive that can do that and get landowners to get on board has to be welcome.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Stokes.
Yeah, thank you.
The lights on first, so.
And I just second that old Professor Clark has made a motion on trees coming to council. Welcome as well. It makes a good point, Chair. It's great to see that for you, but it's just, and I do think hopefully an opportunity at some phase to involve them as well in whatever area within the Alba Basin Park that we say that it gets.
Woodland,
we've got an opportunity to work with the same organisation. Okay. I have Councillor McAteer and Councillor Enright, you indicated, so Councillor McAteer. Yes, John, just as you know, the Farm Woodland Scotland Scheme is only for farmers with 5 hectares or more, and the Environmental Focus Scheme is 3 hectares. So, where does this one here, you know, what level of farmers are able to apply for it? That's what I was interested in.
Chairman, I don't have that level of detail to bring it back, but how it will be selected, obviously, can engage with the Woodland Scotsman involved and how that will move forward, sir, as opposed to just, you know, entering the service and then having to go there. We can bring that level of detail back here.
So I'm kind of, you know, on the Bureau cross purposes, you know, to build another grants in that,
so that's our app. Right. Yeah, there would be, obviously we wouldn't be able to duplicate that way, that would be, there would be obviously a niche there where we couldn't be supporting something that couldn't be supported to another programme.
Thank you, Councillor Ryan.
Yeah, very briefly, Chair. Just on what Councillor Clark said there about us being behind Europe, if you go to the Somme or go to Germany or whatever, there's trees planted everywhere. Every dual carriageway, every motorway, the center reservation street, roundabouts for trees, embankments for trees. Yeah, we don't seem to do that here.
It's certainly a point.
We'll note your point.
Yeah, because it will do away with cross-cutting and everything else.
Okay, we have a proposer and a seconder for that. So we will move on then to building control and regulations. And Holly is here to take this item for us, and it's the review of street nameplates and development naming. Holly, do you want to
through this? Members asked to consider and approve the attached development naming, postal numbering and direction of nameplate policy. The original policy was approved by Councillor in 2015 and is scheduled for a 4-year review as per the Council's equality commitment. The existing policy replaces reference to the existing RTS committee and changes reference over to the ERP, and this is references to the attached work with the director of the ERT, and as you can see that section is ranked for now. Policy includes all new development names, new and accepted road names, dual language nameplate requests, and basically we've separated the new policy into two sections, the policy and the procedure, whereas before the law was locked up one. So my recommendation is to actually approve the policy, and I'm happy to take any comments.
Thanks,
Chairperson. My comments relate to section 4 of the policy, I believe it's called, naming of new streets. I know, having worked out through the years, we've come and get up a couple of time consuming issues to conduct a referenda in street after street, ensuring that new language assignment is brought into being. And indeed, when you've got, say, 20 or 30 streets and a new development that occurs within the middle of them, and every street in the area is already dual language, it baffles me why we can't just simply accept the fact that it is the intention of the people living in that area. Now, over the last couple of years, I've had a situation where several developers have voluntarily, in my area, have agreed to dual language naming. But in a situation where they don't, you then got a referendum, yet another referendum to carry out in an area that is obviously strongly supporting this particular case. So whilst I can see in section 4 there is discretion on behalf of the council to allow dual street naming in your estates, it seems to me that we need to have a sensitive policy where if we're talking about a town or an area where they, all the streets are already dual language, that we need to take that into account when deciding whether or not we would require dual naming for that particular area. And I just don't see that properly expressed in section 4.
Connie, do you want to come in with anything there?
Yeah, I think that was the idea, that for a developer would come forward with a name, that he could also come forward with a dual language, you know, a dual language name for that one. In the previous policy, we had to carry out a survey for residents, and the fact that on a new development we had got residents, and therefore under the new policy we wouldn't have to carry out a survey for residents, and it would be the intention that if a developer wishes to have a dual language being case erected, that we could facilitate that request.
But that's already the policy. It's already happened. So what I'm saying is, if you have 30 houses in an estate, or 30 streets in an estate, and
sorry,
you have
sorry, sorry, could you just put your microphone on just for the recording, please?
So if you have 30 streets in Lancashire, and you've got a new estate street being built in Lancashire, and every single other street in Lancashire has dual language, what you're basically saying to the local population is we've got to wait until the development's finished and then conduct a referendum. It's a very time consuming, it's a waste of volunteers' time. But could we not just acknowledge the fact that there are certain areas where dual naming is the norm?
That would definitely be the intention, and as I said, if the developer proposes to that he wishes to erect a dual language naming, we would definitely facilitate that request without the need to go for a survey of the of future residents.
Okay, I have Councillor Shanna Andrews and Kern all listed for coming in. So Councillor Hanna?
Kern, I'm the chair. I'm not a proposer to accept ownership recommendation. I think it's for the work.
Okay, Councillor Andrews?
First of all, I think before I start the chamber, I do welcome the Council policy of not keeping the town on the end of the day. But I think during the inspection, the Royal Mail and the Post Office of London brought up postcodes and a lot of town on the end for Bourne, but I've got to say I'm coming back. But I do believe, from my point of view, that residents in a particular area should have the opportunity to have their say on names. And I think by taking that away, you know, at the end of the day, people have a chance. Because I think the last few council say, what do you think? A lot of them don't reply, a lot of people reply, but I do think it's important that those people do have their say at a street name or whatever, because something you may say that street name mayn't relate to the local area. So I do want the paper, and I do believe it's important that residents do have their say in the name and policies, and I second that paper.
Okay, Councillor Carter.
Just to review, I was going to check with you, but in relation to name pages, the village name pages were very poor. They have failed for a while, and I took my own village for a glass. As you're going into our glass, so we were coming in, and there's no name page at all. What I'm just saying is, when are they going to be addressed in relation to naming of businesses coming into those areas?
The village name page is not covered by this policy, and that's something that fits with a different director and different a committee, and so therefore I would divert that question to them. And what we'll do is maybe follow that up, I think it's between that, so maybe I could maybe divert that question to them and maybe ask them to come back and give you an answer on that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Hanlon. Just very briefly, going back to your comments about the developers being able to access it in bilingually. Is that something that whenever they submit their request for the street name, and do we go back and remind them of that just to avoid, as the local was saying, in the future having to wait to do the survey? Or could we implement that as something we could do?
The vast majority of applications that we receive are single language for for new developments. We frequently would receive a request from a developer. The developer themselves normally know in advance whether they would like a dual language nameplate or not.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we are happy to facilitate that request now. Well, as I said beforehand, we have able to carry the survey to resident.
Okay,
so we're happy to receive those
okay.
Going forward.
Great, thank you. Okay. We're happy then to move on. We are now going to take, there's an additional item put in regarding the city days. Marie, do you want to take this?
Sure, Keith, have you ever just regarding city days, and this is just following on from the arrangement we had previously. We're recommending, we've been asked for members to represent the council that have been agreed across the councils within the city grouping, and the recommendation is that two shouldn't be a nomination, one NCLP and one unionist nomination, and we would request that the parties provide us with the names. There will be a meeting held very soon. We will continue the reporting arrangements through the ERT committee, so all members will be advised and will have an input into the meeting that we want.
Can you
delegate that when you put it off? Yeah, we would ask that if there is always somebody available, but it will be delegation through the various structure of Shinbian, SCLP and the union of nomination.
Okay, Willie, you want to come in?
Sure, just to propose we accept the recommendation and the two Shinbian nominations is Councillor Casey and myself.
Okay, thank you. And could I ask the unionist grouping and the SCLP to forward their names at their earliest convenience? Councillor Stokes, you?
Yes, Councillor Gordon.
Can you second it? Yeah. Okay. And Philly, and if they can't follow, are you happy just to come back to us rather than stop things, have a conversation and come back to us?
When you say the unionist grouping, do you mean the union
sprint
or the union?
The union
nomination.
Yeah,
the union nomination. At the group leaders, we spoke about it, and as Stephen Taylor says, the biggest part of they were taking it, so it's all for unionists.
Okay, well then we'll follow that up with them, but we have the other members, so thank you for that. Okay, we move on then to item 11. Every time we look at this, it's in history, but it's not a current story programme of events. Sorry, number 12, Marie, is that yourself? No, Andy, sorry.
Chair, so this is give me just details about this event. It's an annual global event celebrating women and equality, and celebrated throughout Ireland's museums, theatres and arts venues. This year, the festival will be involve lightning installations and will be a celebration of the Northern Ireland Women's Movement, and will take place from January this year. So the paper said that the proposals for the Council's involvement in the festival and recommendations of our involvement.
Okay. Charlie, I thought you were going to say a little quick time there on the equality. No?
Of course.
Okay. Thanks for handling. I would just like to welcome them. I think it's brilliant to celebrate women and obviously equality for them. So hope this goes well for everybody. Do you want to propose?
No, we won't.
Yeah. Okay, anybody else want to come in? Councillor Andrews?
First of all, that's a very important paper, and I like me to go on so well with the way to all of them. I'd like to second the paper, and
okay. Thank you very much. Okay. No, keep it nice and pleasant. Okay,
thanks. Sorry, it's just as well it wasn't there Saturday, we've got the red bubble.
It's just I know that the number of councillors are all the same, and thank of these women are just getting far too much power. Isn't that right, sir? Okay, folks, we are just, the next three items are to be taken in committee. So items 12, 13 and 14. These items are deemed to be restricted by virtue of paragraph 3 of part 1 of section 6 of the Local Government Act. And I 2014, information relating to the financial business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may by resolution be excluded during this item of business. So thanks for leaving the room, and we will then move swiftly into item 13. Can we have a proposal? Councillor Burgess and the Secretary, Councillor Hammond, to go in, and I will just read through a hundred of the recorders for the somebody give a shout, say if the recorders are still there. They're not there. Okay. Well, okay, just for the minutes then, item 13 was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Andrews, seconded by Councillor Norton, to present a paper on the AOSB to SPNR committee in September 2019. Item 14 was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Enright, seconded by Councillor Curran, to proceed with the vesting application in relation to the County Down Railway extension. Item 15 was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Clark, that the Council approved a pilot to operate without prejudice for a period of 3 months until December 2020. The following items are... 2019.
Madam Chair, can it be noted that request, I put in that request for that meeting of the users group of the mayor?
Yes, we have been at the old Henry, and and again, any of councillors that have any issues that want raised, the officers are all here, and now is the time to do it, as opposed to trying to bring it in during the meeting. Okay, we're near the end for our meeting, because the following items are all for noting only.
Chair, just
to
get some information on a couple of them.
They're for noting only,
is that? I was sort of looking at that when I was doing the food too, and you know, one was a family, I thought the chief family was here, obviously.
They are actually for noting, and I am going to stick to that, because I think whenever we start deviating from the papers in front of us, it becomes a bit like mayhem. What I would ask is, Anthony, if you would be willing to talk to Councillor McAteer for a moment after the Nigel Grimms, because we all like this. Okay.
Sure.
Who's
word on that?
So,
I think the negative number 80. It was just that some of the figures there for the targets, well, they were low. I was just to note them.
Just discuss it, and if the officers and yourself feel that it's something you want to bring back tonight or whatever, that's fine. Okay. But I am sticking to it, because I feel it's only fair that we treat everybody and everything as we said at the beginning, for sticking to the papers. So items from 15 onwards are for noting. Item 15, the planning performance, or 16, the planning performance figures. Item 17, the ERT business plan review. Item 18, the update on the Greenways. Item 19, the review on the ERTF and the NIPSUCP.
OMG.
Item 20, the tourism promotion event. Item 21, the scheme of delegation. And item 22, the ERT historic action tracker. Proposed
seconder,
we note those.
Proposed seconder, Councillor Riley. Yeah, well, Chair, it was just on the promotion of tourism events. It used to be that councillors were able to go to those, because there's nobody will promote their own area like an elected councillor. I don't know what the current situation is now, but
we have a conversation about that at a later date. As I say, that's just the way I intend to move forward. We're going to stick. Sorry, who seconded that?
I
Carn.
Councillor Carn. So we've got our proposal in second. Thank you very much, councillors, and I'll see you soon. Thank you.